Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
On Tuesday, Nebraska executed 60-year-old convicted murderer Carrie Dean Moore. And with that, it became a day of firsts. It was the first execution in 21 years in Nebraska, and the first execution by lethal injection there. It was also the first time in our country's history that a state used the synthetic opioid fentanyl to put someone to death. Fentanyl was responsible for the overdose deaths of tens of thousands of Americans last year and has become a significant driver of the opioid crisis. But using it to kill someone on death row, that is a first. Maurice Shumma is a staff writer at the Marshall Project. Maurice, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So much to unpack here, but let's start with the fentanyl. Why use fentanyl in this case?
So for the past 5 to 10 years, states around the country that have the death penalty and want to carry out executions have struggled to find drugs. Part of that is drug companies saying that they don't want their products used in these executions. Part of it is activists, both in Europe and the U.S., kind of putting public pressure on those companies. And the result is that they've sort of had to go far afield and look for new combinations of drugs, new sources of drugs. And there's just a constant sort of game of hopscotch that happens. And fentanyl became the latest drug that was used. And of course, it had the reputation as being sort of a well-known drug that has caused all these overdose deaths, where, of course, you know, many of the drugs that are used in these executions are pretty much obscure unless you're an anesthesiologist.
Now, does this execution on Tuesday mean that we're going to see more states turning to fentanyl?
It's possible. Nevada has already considered using fentanyl and plans to use it and was actually scheduled to use it first before that execution got stayed. And I do think that states will see what happened in Nebraska and say, well, this is a new combination that is potentially, you know, very useful and gets around some of the problems we've been having getting drugs. But that said, it's not clear where the fentanyl in this case came from. And a separate drug company protested the use of its drugs in court, even, you know, before the execution happened. A judge ruled for the state in that case, but you can imagine sort of a series of new challenges by drug companies and kind of ongoing litigation that makes it sort of questionable whether fentanyl will really become sort of the main way that states execute now.
Well, and we should remind our listeners that here on The Takeaway a couple months ago, we covered a Nevada case which was set to be the first use of fentanyl, and then the case was halted. Can you tell us why? What happened there?
Sure. It was a prisoner named Scott Dozier. Both he and Carrie Dean Moore, the man who was executed in Nebraska yesterday, are what is called in the legal world volunteers. They gave up their appeals and said, I don't want to fight this anymore. I want to be executed. In both Nebraska and Nevada, that set off a sort of frantic scramble to get the execution chamber running again to find these drugs. And in Nevada, everything was set up for Scott Dozier to be executed not long ago. And then a couple of drug companies went into court and said, we think that our drugs were obtained illegally by the state, and we think that the execution should be halted while we contest in court, you know, the way in which these drugs were acquired because we opposed their use in this execution.
And what about in the broader context of the opioid crisis we're facing in the United States, as we mentioned in the introduction here? Do you think there's any risk in using the drug for this purpose when it's already dangerously prevalent on the streets, or are those two completely different things?
Well, certainly I think that state prison agencies that are carrying out these executions would try to say that they're completely separate. You know, fentanyl, although it has caused many overdose deaths, that isn't the same as, you know, it has clinical therapeutic uses. And when you inject it into somebody for an execution, it's sort of not particularly well understood or known what happens. Yesterday was the first time, of course, and there are media accounts. I don't think there's been any sort of autopsy released yet. So we really don't know what it does to you, especially in conjunction with these other drugs. And similarly, you know, if someone's out on the street and uses fentanyl, it might be in combination with other drugs. So every situation is kind of unique. But the question of whether it's dangerous, I mean, an execution is about ending a life. And those people who support the death penalty often point to the sort of egregious nature of the original murder and say, well, this is going to be better than that. So it doesn't matter if there's some pain. There's sort of always a legal debate about cruel and unusual punishment with these drugs. And we're going to kind of see that continuing. I could imagine the opioid crisis and the ways in which overdoses play out kind of informing that debate.
The state of Nebraska executed a man using a cocktail that included fentanyl on Tuesday, and we're unpacking that execution with Maurice Shema of the Marshall Project. Maurice, let's look at Nebraska itself. The state has had a pretty interesting and or challenging relationship with the death penalty. Give us a sense of what's been happening there.
So that's true. Nebraska in the last 40, 50 years has carried out very few executions. The last one was in 1997. It's one of a number of states that kind of have the death penalty in theory, but not in practice. You know, they keep it on the books, but they very rarely carry it out. It's not Texas or Florida or Georgia. The legislature there, which is like the state as a whole, fairly conservative, voted to abolish the death penalty several years ago, and it was considered a big kind of bellwether in terms of conservatives rethinking whether the death penalty was a good idea. So some of them said that it's too expensive. Some of them said that it robs people of the chance at redemption. There was kind of a Christian influence there. There was a libertarian influence saying that it was kind of government overreach. So the legislature votes to abolish the death penalty. The governor, Pete Ricketts, who is a supporter of the death penalty, vetoes that legislation. The legislature overrides the veto, and then Ricketts, along with a big kind of grassroots swell of Nebraskans, put the question of the death penalty on to a public vote and voted back in.
Which Ricketts, I want to talk about Ricketts here, because he, number one, he's Catholic. Mm-hmm. And Pope Francis has condemned the death penalty, let's be very clear. And then Ricketts is also pro-death penalty. And he pushed this agenda forward with his own money, is that right?
Right, that's right.
How do you figure that out? You could be Catholic and pro-death penalty.
You can. I mean, every Catholic politician, going back to Kennedy, has had to kind of navigate the relationship between their faith and their public views and the sort of what they view to be the will of the people. I think Ricketts, on the one hand, could be kind of politically grandstanding. On the other, might really think that the number of Nebraskans who want the death penalty is a lot. It's over 50%. And there's sort of a political quandary for him, I think, going forward, now that the Pope's decision is sort of putting pressure on Catholic politicians to define their views and really articulate why it is that they continue to support the death penalty.
Maurice Shema, staff writer at the Marshall Project. Maurice, thank you for everything, as always.
Thank you.